China's aggressive trade retaliation is raising alarm in the U.S. heartland. Among 106 products that China has threatened to hit with a whopping 25% tariff, soybeans, the country's biggest agricultural export to China last year. Some farmers Reuters spoke to said they had planned to harvest more soybeans this year because demand from China made it more profitable than other crops. In fact, soybeans were set to overtake corn as the country's most widely planted. Now that's up in the air. Weinrob says some farmers are debating letting their fields go fallow.
While many of Oklahoma's teachers have walked off the job this week, some have already walked across state lines in search of higher paying opportunities. Discontent has grown after years of declining public school spending in Oklahoma, where teachers are some of the lowest paid in the country.
The Philippines has closed its most famous tourism island to tourists. There'll be a major cleanup of Boracay over the next 6 months, which Firebrand President Rodrigo Duterte has branded a cesspool. A favorite among local and international tourists for its sugar-white sand and crystal-clear ocean, Boracay has been deteriorating as a result of what Duterte has called an overzealous development on the beachfront and inadequate sewage facilities.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. And it's Friday, April 6th, 5:10 in the morning. We're glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. And another business day getting underway. We've got a good broadcast for you today. A little later in the show, as we do every Friday, we're going to talk to Brian Summers of Skift.com. We've got some news about the aviation industry and airlines. One airline's taking a new hands-on approach to sexual harassment and even sexual assault on airplanes. We will have a conversation with Brian in our second segment this morning. Paul Nolte is in the house this morning as well. We're going to talk about the economy and all things portfolio and investments coming up with Paul momentarily. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are off 171 points this morning. NASDAQ futures are down 37. S&P futures are down 16. Looks like it might be a negative open on Wall Street today. And yep, you guessed it, more concerns about trade. And we'll talk with Paul first off about that in just a second. Around the rest of the world this morning, London, Germany, France, all lower by about 0.5%. London down by just a fraction. And in Asia, the Nikkei is going to end up finishing down about a third, down about 77 points. Markets, some of the other markets there are in positive territory. Oil is trading at $63.30 a barrel, which is down about 24 cents. Yesterday, Donald Trump, President Trump, said that he would like to see, or at least have planning for, another $100 billion in tariffs on China goods. This in retaliation to China saying it was going to target U.S. goods. It certainly sounds like a trade war shooting back and forth. Paul Nolte is here this morning from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, that's sort of the definition of a trade war, isn't it, when you start shooting back and forth at each other?
It is, and that's what we're starting to see, is it's escalating. There's a couple things that are going on behind the scenes here, I think, that, you know, it's interesting to note. One is the futures were down almost 2% after the announcement. We've recovered about half of that. So similar to what we've seen with Brexit, Trump elections, and all the other things that had been going on since then, the markets are getting used to the discussions around tariffs. The second part of it is the fact that we're importing a lot from China versus what we're exporting to China. We just got the trade numbers yesterday, day before yesterday, largest trade deficit in the United States for over 20 years. So the administration now, I think, is emboldened to say, we're going to try to fix this, and this is the way to do it with one of our largest importing countries. And most of it is around intellectual capital. And that's really, I think, at the heart of all of this is taking of intellectual capital, if you will, by China.
Is there a better way to do this? I saw a think piece yesterday that said, you know, if the U.S. would have stayed in the Trans-Pacific Partnership and had those countries with us, we could have had maybe a stronger force against China, that we could have done this in a more diplomatic, easier way than to have what we've been seeing over the last 2 weeks or so.
Oh, it's very possible. One of the things, though, that we're starting to see is comments from other countries, from Germany and some of the European countries. They're having some of the same trouble with China. They have not spoken up much to this point and have preferred, obviously, to negotiate behind the scenes. But many other countries are having the same issues in dealing with China. China has only opened their doors and has been a part of the World Trade Organization for less than maybe about a decade or so. And so this has been going on since they've been a part of the WTO. It's hard to say which is better, what is better. The results are going to take a while for that to happen. As we've seen with the steel and aluminum tariffs, it's going to take a while for that to work its way through the economy. And as we saw, we backed off a lot of the trade rhetoric and allowed other countries, which initially were part of the tariffs, to not be part of that.
It is hitting part of our economy now. Farmers will tell you that they're seeing prices. I mean, soybean prices are down dramatically because of all of this. So it is kind of impacting part of the economy now, a big part of our economy.
It's the initial reaction. And we saw soybean prices rally very strongly the last couple of days, just as the Dow has. And when you take a look at it from year-to-date numbers, actually a lot of the ag prices are actually up a little bit from the start of the year. So you are getting that initial reaction negatively. And I think if this were to continue, you will see a lot of those prices continue to be lower. And it will take a few months to work its way into the overall economy. But this is we're seeing the front end of it. And this is the fear that the markets have, and why the markets are reacting so negatively is those pricing, the higher prices that we may experience from those tariffs are going to work their way into the economy and ultimately slow down the global economy, slow down the U.S. economy, resulting in lower earnings, which means lower stock prices.
I heard one of the talking heads yesterday ask the question, and I think it's a pretty good question. Why did we have to do any of this right now?
Well, that would be not the question to me, but maybe to President Trump.
Right.
But I think really what he's doing is following through on what he's promised. When he ran for president, he ran on lower taxes, less regulation, and trade. And he's been on trade for 20, 30 years. I mean, that's been his big thing, is that we're getting the bad end of a deal on trade. And he's been pounding the table for that for a long time. So this is, and actually, if you take a look, what's odd is you look at his approval ratings, and his approval ratings have actually gone up in the last few weeks. So,
well, depending on what poll you look at.
Well, that's true. But again, so he's feeling emboldened that this is the right path to take.
It is Jobs Friday. We haven't even touched on that yet. So, Paul, hang on. We'll come back and talk about the big jobs report that's due out today and more about what happened in the economy this week.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Stocks rebounded Thursday, but the escalating trade fight between the U.S. and China could make for a bumpy ride. President Trump announcing he's considering an additional $100 billion of tariffs on Chinese goods. China saying it won't back down either. That has sent markets overseas sharply lower. Amazon signaling it will spend millions to lobby lawmakers and regulators as it tries to expand its reach into grocery stores and the healthcare sector. The data breach affecting Delta's chat rooms is bigger than expected. Airline officials say the personal information of several hundred thousand customers may have been compromised by malware last fall on a software service company. That information included addresses and credit card numbers. Sears also affected. And some good news for Samsung, the South Korean tech giant, which has struggled with leadership issues and smartphones catching fire, says its first quarter profits are up 56%, beating estimates. Sales also rose 19%. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to The Opening Bell Friday edition. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager over at Kingsview, and he comes over here and tells us what we should do with our portfolios every Friday, and we're happy he does that. Paul, it's Jobs Friday. What are we expecting from the big report?
We're expecting about 190 to 200,000 in new jobs. We're expecting the unemployment rate maybe even to get below 4. Certainly maybe tick down to 4%. wage growth should come up some, and that's really, I think, going to be the focus of a lot of investors, is to see, we've all been waiting for this wage growth inflation that we really haven't seen much. It's been very benign at roughly 2% or so, 2.5%.
For most Americans, have they? When's the last time we saw a 4% unemployment rate?
You'd have to go back into the late 50s, early 60s to see something that low.
Yeah.
And that's the thought, is that we are at full employment or maybe beyond full employment right now, and we should be seeing wage pressure. We've all heard the stories of, you know, we can't find people to employ. We have jobs, but we just can't find people to fill those jobs. And so pressures are building on the wage side. When we take a look at the report and we look at where the jobs are, they tend to be in the lower paying jobs. So when you take a look at an average, if you're adding a lot at the lower end, your average is going to stay stable to come down a little bit. And I think that's what we've been experiencing in the numbers.
The ADP private payrolls report this week was pretty good. It's actually better than expected.
Yeah, it was. And that's part of the reason why I think a lot of people are looking at today's report and expecting very good numbers. The ADP report, again, we don't have a long enough history to compare to our jobs report. That's only been around. The ADP report's been around for 5 or 6 years. But based on that report, we should see potentially as high as 225,000 in new jobs.
Even if we see 160 or 180, that's a pretty good number still, considering what you just said about the job market being almost full.
Right. And what we're seeing, though, is we're seeing a lot of people that have been out of the job market coming back in. So we've talked a lot about those that have been out of the market for a long time, sitting on the sidelines, and now with the job market being as good as it is, they're coming into the job market. So part of the reason why we've been able to see 200,000 in new jobs, but the unemployment rate kind of stay right where it's at, it's all the people that are currently unemployed that have been finding jobs.
What impact is the jobs report, specifically the wages part of this, having on the bond market?
That's going to be the interesting part. And the expectation is, and the Fed has already signaled, that we're going to raise rates. And the only thing that may stop them from doing it is bad jobs numbers and potentially some of the tariff talk that we've been talking about earlier. But if wages do pick up here, it gives the Fed all that more reason to raise rates. The expectation is that they're going to raise rates 3 times. If we see wage growth pick up significantly, the risk is then that we're going to raise rates 4 times this year. The thought right now is 3 is pretty much a given. 4 is an outside shot.
What do you like here at the end of the week? Where have you been putting your money this week? Did you do a little buying this week?
We did a little bit. Actually, we took a little bit of money off the table as the markets rallied here. I mean, we had a 1,000-point rally from the low Wednesday to the high yesterday. And the argument that we've made is that, you know, the volatility that we're seeing in the market right now is somewhat unprecedented. We haven't seen the 1% to 2% daily moves back to back to back like this ever in the marketplace. And because of that volatility, we've been getting a little bit more defensive in our portfolios, putting a little bit more money in shorter-term cash bonds, short-term bonds, and pulling a little bit of money off of the equity side of the of our portfolios.
The weekend is here. You got big plans? What are you going to do this weekend?
This weekend is going to be quiet. After all of the stuff that we've been doing for the last few weekends, chasing children around and Easter and everything else, so we're going to be kind of laying back and keeping things a little bit closer to home this weekend.
Were you watching baseball yesterday?
Freezing, yes. It was very... we got to get Skilling in here and get this thing fixed, because spring is here.
Right. We should not be seeing snowflakes when we go to the ballpark. That's
absolutely
sure.
Not.
Paul, you're going to be back this morning. We'll do a podcast again on the jobs report. So probably mid-morning, we'll post that at WGNradio.com. We'll kind of tear apart the numbers and give you a little quick analysis before the lunch hour. So be watching for that if you're watching our page today, WGNradio.com. And Paul, we always are happy to have you here on Fridays, and have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management. Kingsview.com is where you can learn more about Paul and his colleagues.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Edovo, a Chicago startup that provides tablet-based education to inmates in an effort to reduce recidivism, has raised $9.8 million in a new round of funding. The startup has expanded to 22 states and has reached over 50,000 incarcerated individuals. Sears announced it's been hit with a data breach that occurred at an online support service company that services Sears online chat platforms. The retailer estimates that less than 100,000 of customer credit cards were impacted. And Groupon has inked a deal with the Universal Orlando Resort theme parks to sell various ticket packages to three parks in the Orlando area, including Universal Studios. Groupon said it plans to offer limited-time ticket discounts for as low as $45 per day. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition. There is news this week about Alaska Airlines stepping up sexual harassment and even sexual assault training. And a regional airline has gone out of business, and they say it's because of a pilot shortage. Brian Summers is here today to talk about some of this. He's an airline business reporter for Skift.com, and he is with us via Skype. Brian, let's start with Alaska Airlines. Great Lakes Airlines going out of business.
But Great Lakes Airlines was a very small airline that was mainly in the Mountain West. They flew turboprops, and as you said, they went out of business. They went out of business last week, and unlike most airlines, they didn't run out of money. They didn't go bankrupt. They simply said, we do not have enough pilots. We don't have hope that we can hire enough pilots. And so we're going to have to shut down.
And this is going to potentially be a problem for other airlines, too. What is being done to sort of combat this shortage?
Well, Great Lakes was at the bottom of the food chain. You know, they weren't one of these larger airlines that fly as United Express or American Eagle or Delta Connection. They were sort of this small, independent airline that would take people maybe to Cheyenne, Wyoming, places like that, with planes between 9 and 30 seats. And, I mean, at the end of the day, no one's really sure whether there's a true pilot shortage or there's just, you know, not as many pilots as airlines would like. But if you're a 25-year-old pilot and you have enough hours to get hired at a major airline or a regional airline, you probably don't want to fly 30-seat turboprops anymore. You at least want to go to a regional airline like United Express that might get you to United within 5 or 10 years. So it is really hard for these small airlines that people have never heard of to attract pilots right now.
How much is it, Brian, that people don't like flying on these little turboprop aircraft anymore?
Well, certainly people in Chicago don't like flying on a turboprop aircraft anymore. You've gotten used to regional jets and things like that. But in a lot of these very small markets, especially in the Mountain West, where driving is difficult and you're not going to see a 76-seat regional aircraft, turboprops is all you have. And so there are some markets, I bring up Cheyenne again, where you know what, it's going to be a little bit of a problem and people probably didn't mind it as much to be on a turboprop because that was the only way to get to Denver.
I know that your story talks about, back to the pilot shortage part of this, that some universities that train pilots are actually seeing an uptick in applications.
Yeah, you know, for a very long time in the early 2000s, people didn't want to become pilots because there were no jobs. The big airlines were all headed into bankruptcy. They were not hiring pilots. In fact, they were furloughing pilots. And there wasn't a lot of hope in being an airline pilot. If you somehow got a job, even in 2010, 11, or 12, as things were getting back to normal, you still weren't paid very well. There were more pilots available than people that wanted to do the job. Now we're in a different position. Again, nobody's really sure if there's a true shortage, but pilots, even at the regional level, are getting paid quite a bit more money than they used to. They're getting signing bonuses. And more importantly, they see a future. So people don't want to go work at a regional airline at age 25 and make $60,000 a year unless they know that in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, they're going to be working at United Airlines. They're going to get to live in Chicago and Denver, and they're going to get to fly the big, heavy jets. Just about every pilot out there will tell you they want to fly big jets, not small jets, and they want hope that that's an opportunity.
Well, let's switch to Alaska Airlines, the company overhauling how it trains its employees about sexual harassment and assault. Why are they doing this?
Well, you know, sexual harassment in particular is a problem on airplanes. It's probably always been a problem, but you know that we're in the middle of this Me Too environment right now, and airlines are not immune. You have a lot of people in the public, most well-behaved, some not, on an airplane in very close proximity, and some people do not act appropriately to their seatmates. In addition, some people don't act appropriately to flight attendants or pilots or ground crew. And in recent months, you know, this has been a bigger problem. Alaska had a problem with Randy Zuckerberg last year, who's the sister of the Facebook CEO and founder, and she said that she was sexually harassed in first class on a flight from Los Angeles to Mexico, and she told the flight crew, and they really didn't do anything about it. So Alaska has come out and said, you know what, we need some policies and procedures. We need to make sure that our passengers know that if there's a problem, they can go see the flight attendant. They can say what the problem is. And if necessary, law enforcement will be called in. You know, this is a lot of common sense stuff, but I think people need to understand that sexual harassment happens on airplanes as well. And Alaska understands that its crews need to be trained accordingly.
Do you have any sense of what this training will be? Will it be sort of in front of a computer, or will it be kind of real world in-person training?
It should be pretty much a real world in-person training. I mean, I think that a lot of workplaces have similar training. I don't know exactly what Alaska will have, but at least it will be something.
There's another story about the Department of Transportation finding Australian airline Qantas. What's happening there?
I like this one. It's a bit of a trivia question for people that don't follow aviation very closely. So every day, Qantas has a nonstop flight from Los Angeles to New York. It's really one of, if not the only, major international airline to have a flight entirely within the United States. Technically, that's called cabotage, and it should be illegal. That's why Emirates can't fly, say, from San Francisco to New York. But there is a carve-out for Qantas, and the reason that Qantas is able to do it is because it's technically not really a nonstop flight within the United States. You can only buy that Qantas flight if you start or end your journey in Australia. So you can fly Sydney, Los Angeles, and immediately to New York, but you can't just fly from Los Angeles to New York. It's basically a continuation of a flight from Australia. Now, that's worked very well for decades, but as you say, the Department of Transportation saw something unusual from Qantas in 2015 and 2016. And basically, instead of just selling that ticket for people going on to Australia, as they always had, they let some other people buy it who were going on to Tahiti and to New Zealand. And the Department of Transportation said, no, you have this special carve-out to fly within the United States, but it's only on your flights to and from Australia with a continuation from New York. Nobody else can use it.
Is there been any effort to sort of change these rules recently or in the future?
No, there really hasn't been a lot of effort to change these cabotage rules in the United States or anywhere else. Governments feel pretty strongly that if you're going to fly domestic routes within a country, you should be an airline based in that country. I know that some passengers would love it if Emirates or Qatar Airways decided to fly within the United States, but I just don't think it's going to happen at any point. I think our choices now are going to be our choices for the future, unless maybe there's a new U.S. entrant.
Brian, I feel like you've made us smarter today with a new term that I bet a lot of us didn't know, cabotage.
Cabotage, yes. It's just one of those airline words. I think it's also used in the shipping industry as well. It's a fun word that makes you sound a little bit smarter than you are.
Brian, always good chatting with you. See you again next time.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is airline business reporter for Skift.com. You can follow Skift on Twitter at Skift. Also follow Brian as well. Good stuff there at Brian Summers, S-U-M-E-R-S. And Brian is with us every Friday here in the Opening Bell to talk about all things aviation and airlines.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, a lot of red this morning on our futures. Market Dow futures off 159 points. NASDAQ futures are off 38. S&P futures are down about 15 points. Let's bring you up to date on agriculture and commodities. Orion Samuelson is with us this morning. Orion, good morning. Our conversation from this morning is all about this trade situation. What's going on?
Well, the United States and China are trying to slap tariffs on different products. And if you do that as a country on one country, they'll retaliate by slapping tariffs on products that are coming from us. And, of course, the situation with us and China, they need what we produce in the way of food and food products, soybeans being a big item. Pork, they import a lot of pork from the United States, but they've got so much pork on hand in China, they may not be buying as much there. So every day this week, we have been watching the markets move up and down, reacting to the different views on what kind of a trade war are we going to get into, and soybeans have taken the brunt, but again, yesterday, the July soybean contract went up 14 cents a bushel. July corn went up 8 cents a bushel, and July wheat went up 6 cents a bushel. So it's tit for tat, and I'm just waiting to see what actually happens. Incidentally, a week from today, or from Saturday, tomorrow, we're going to talk to the Assistant Secretary of Agriculture, Bill Northey, who is from Iowa, been a good friend for a long time, and he has finally been approved by Congress to move into the Department of Agriculture. And he said yesterday, speaking at a meeting in Kansas, a commodity conference, he said, you know, there's a lot of different options out there to protect farmers. And he said, we're looking at all of them. So I'm going to wait and see. It's not a good thing to get into a trade war, obviously, because of what we see in retaliation. But I'm going to wait and see, because I'm wondering, do we need China more than China needs us? There are certain products that China, of course, really won't get too bothered by retaliation. But when it comes to food, that population in China needs soybeans and soybean crushing and soybean meal. And so I'm going to wait and see on it, but it's not good at the moment.
Yeah. Orion, I've heard a couple of people say that there are things, and I think the president yesterday even said this, that there are things that we can do to protect farmers. What would be some of those things?
Well, I'm going to wait and see, because I don't know at this point when you get into this kind of a negotiation. Bill Northey, who is the USDA Farm Production and Conservation Undersecretary, said that very thing, that there are a lot of different options out there. But he didn't expand on that. And so right now it's retaliation time, and I think the end of May is when these tariffs go into place. The one thing this week in the trade deficit report, the Chinese trade deficit dropped about 28% was the number that the Commerce Department gave us yesterday. But you know, we have such a major trade imbalance with China that the president says we have to do something about it. So we're going to have to wait and see what it is we can do.
Farm economy has been, especially the last 5 years or so, farm incomes are down 50%. You can see why farmers would be kind of worried and frustrated over all of this.
Well, yeah, and because they have been in a tough income situation, and that's been reflected this past week in companies that serve agriculture. Monsanto's earnings report fell short of what they were hoping, missing profit estimates. Corn disappointed. Corn seed sales were disappointing. And then yesterday, Cargill reported third quarter profit dropping as well. So the companies, particularly the companies that trade in grain, that buy grain in the United States and sell grain in the export market, have indeed been suffering, and that transmits back to farmers suffering. So they've been going through a period of income being down considerably over the last 5 years, and they'd like to see it come back a little bit so that they can, as one farmer said, so I can afford to buy the seed to produce the crop this year, because there are some farmers saying, I don't have the money to buy the seed to start the crop year. So a lot of waiting right now to see where this economy is going.
What is on the morning show tomorrow?
Well, on the morning show tomorrow, I'm looking forward to talking to a fellow farm broadcaster from Minnesota, Lynn Kettleson, who we check in with every once in a while to see what Minnesota farmers are doing in North Country. And there is beginning to be some concern over the cold and the wet season we're encountering. But with the equipment we've got today, we can plant half of the corn crop in 1 week because of the huge equipment that's out there. So we'll be talking about that and what farmers in the upper Midwest are doing.
All right. We will be listening too. Orion, have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Morning show with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday. It is April 6th. The jobs report is front and center this morning. The U.S. jobs report mid-morning. Also today, Chicago Fed President Charles Evans will be speaking. Actually, that'll be tomorrow morning. And Jerome Powell will be speaking today. Consumer credit report coming as well. But it is the jobs report that we will see mid-morning. And reminder that Paul Nolte and I will be back mid-morning with a podcast at WGNradio.com, tearing apart the latest jobs report and wage situation. We'll post that online mid-morning, probably shortly after the jobs report is issued.